Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
And so I put myself back into music, and a couple of music agents, when I'd first moved to New York, had told me to not talk about my past, the ex-gay therapy and all that stuff, because they just said it was too specific and it would alienate me and my audience, and it would only target to gays, and I needed to be have more broad approach and appeal to a bigger audience that would be receptive to my music genre here in New York. And so for a while I didn't even talk about it as a backstory in my songs. I would just kind of generalize things, and it kind of lost a little bit of my oomph in it, I think. And it wasn't until after that whole experience that I was playing a gig at the Bitter End, which is in the Village area, and you know, everyone from the Doors to, you know, it's a really cool little bar club. It goes back a long time, kind of like CBGB's, kind of that kind of heritage. So I was playing a gig there, and I was playing my song Goodbye Goodbye that I released in 05 when I was still living in Utah off the Runaway album. And at the end of the song, I just threw in a lyric that's not in it, and I stopped playing the guitar for a split second, and I just said, "Bitch, I'm gay," and then I go back into the song again. And the crowd just laughed their asses off, and at the end of it, I'm like, yeah, well, actually, that's true. I went through 2 years of ex-gay therapy, and everyone was like, what? Oh, my God. And the owner of the place and the manager came up, and they're like, you have got to talk about that stuff. That makes the song, like, even more interesting. Like, you need to make this part of your gig. And, you know, this is what's going to separate you from the other 9 million people in New York that are carrying an acoustic guitar on their back, yeah. You know? And so I started doing that, and then that's kind of when Pride gigs started happening. I got cast in this musical called Our Country, which was it was in the New York Musical Theater Festival and the Planet Connections Theater Festivity, and it won Best New Musical, and I got Best Actor in it.
Wow.
It was awesome, and it kind of kick-started me back into my music again. That's kind of where I found my passion again. It really woke me up, and performing on stage again, like I had before, kind of renewed that fire, you know. It kind of put it back and said, oh, this is why I came here. This is what I love, you know. And ironically enough, the person that wrote the score and the book and the lyrics, his name's Tony Asaro, and he and I have become extremely close and very good friends. He lives in San Francisco now, but he stalked me on, like, MySpace and Facebook and any other site that I had my profile on. And I'm like, who the hell are you? You're, like, 5'6", and I'm not interested. And he's like, no. You know, I'm a writer. I've written this script, and I've heard your music, and you are exactly the person I really want to play this part. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. And he's like, no, please just listen to this, hear this out. And I read it, and I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. And it's about a country superstar who gets outed like George Michael and gets shunned kind of like the Dixie Chicks did. And
Katie Lang.
Yeah, or Katie Lang, yeah. And the show is about his reflection back on the process of what happened to his career. And the audience is basically there to see a concert. So the whole venue is set up just like it's a big it's set up, you know, like you're going to go see a band perform, and then the different people in the band play the other parts in the show, the other characters. So it's pretty cool. And the country artist goes through ex-gay therapy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then ends up deciding to not pretend anymore, and he starts his career over. His record label drops him, and he starts back to square one, and he's playing at the back room of some seedy leather bar, and that's the setting for the show that you actually see. He's got these like leather posters and all this stuff up as part of the scenery in the backdrop. But it was so fun, and I didn't have to find much motivation for the part in certain aspects, and it was awesome. I got great reviews and kind of put me back on the map, and I felt like, okay, this is definitely, you know, the universe kind of answering back, like, okay, so now you're going to want, if you want to focus on what you came here for, here you go. I started playing more gigs after that. I mean, it just really pushed things forward very quickly. Been on some New York talk shows here numerous times. Sirius Out Q Radio has had me on numerous times, and I started recording my new album, Nothing This Real, and I got busy with so many gigs, Pride gigs and otherwise, that I had to keep delaying the release because I didn't have time to stop and plan for an album release party. But it finally got done, and now I'm working on a new single that I want to drop in October. It's called Falling Away, and it kind of goes around the idea that we're all told if you do A, B, and C, you end up with X, Y, and Z, and that 99.999% of us do A, B, and C, and we end up with R, Q, W, and various other letters that we weren't ever told about, and we weren't really, you know, promised. And, you know, it's that realization for me that I am exactly where I'm supposed to be, and this path is really where I was supposed to be, and I did A, B, and C, and I didn't get X, Y, and Z, and that's exactly supposed to be the case as well. And that, you know, according to the prescribed path, I have fallen away, but it's exactly where I'm supposed to be, and it's an amazing place to be.
So how many years have you been doing the Pride gigs and all these, you know, how many years has it been that you've been really active with your career, with your music career anyway?
Since 2010.
Okay, so you're on. And what are some of the cities you've done Prides at?
I mean, and it just blew up, man. Like, I did some smaller cities. Like, first it was like Wichita, Kansas, and then Providence, Rhode Island. And then suddenly, like the next year, boom, Stockholm, Sweden, New York Pride, LA Pride, San Diego Pride. And I'm going back again for the third year in a row to San Diego Pride on their main stage.
Wow.
Salt Lake, actually, Utah Pride flew me back out to perform, to co-headline the festival 2 years ago. And I'm kind of like, you know, I'm from there. They said, yes, we know. That's why we're doing this. And in fact, it actually made the front page of the Tribune, the Salt Lake Tribune. Yeah, local talent returns to Utah to perform at Pride.
Cool.
And it was pretty cool. And I'm like, Dad, did you get any hate mail or anything? Because it sure as hell got a lot of negative comments online. You know, people, of course, anytime anyone says the word gay in Utah, people freak out.
So
Utah Pride, Atlanta Pride a couple years in a row, Phoenix, Las Vegas. I just got back from Seattle Pride over the past weekend.
Yeah, I know you've done D.C., you've done Seattle, you've done
One in Springfield, Missouri. And then there's a few more planned that I can't tell you about because I haven't signed the contracts, but
Well,
they're coming up.
I need to start sending more Mormons your way.
Okay.
People marching in parades, they should also get to see a real Moho singing.
That would be cool. And it's interesting, there are, actually almost every gig, there's a, you know, they're either active members or previous members of the church that come up to me and talk to me. Because I want to meet my audience. I want to talk to them. I don't want to be this, you know, sitting behind a table just trying to sell stuff. You know, I want to interact and make that connection because that's what really my music's about anyway. It's not just to play a catchy hook. It's to really connect with people and really share that intimate part of my life.
And part of your show is really about sharing. I mean, you sort of explain your songs in the context of your personal experience as part of the show.
Right. Correct. Okay. And
so your audience is really aware that you came from this background. And
yeah. And the ones that aren't get caught up pretty quick.
Yeah.
And, it's been pretty cool. Like, I did Palm Springs Pride last year as well. And there was a gentleman that came up and I have a song that I wrote on my album, called State of Loneliness. And it's about trying to help, someone that I cared about a lot, through an addiction process and trying to get him to overcome it and losing myself in that whole process. realizing that he needed to want to change before I could even help him. But I had just lost myself in that whole process. I was almost losing my mind. And so I played the song, and he came up, and he had struggled with an addiction. And he said that, you know, now I was bawling when you played that song, because I finally realized what people were feeling watching me go through this. It was really touching and, you know, bittersweet in the situation. But it's that kind of connection when I talk to people either online or after a gig that really connect with my music that makes it worth it. You know, in Stockholm, there were just thousands of people. But the coolest part of the gig, though, was after it was over and I went online to check some things and people were blogging in Swedish. We got there to see Justin Utley. I love that song, Stand for Something. And I was just like, how the hell do you even know who I am? And it's just been a really amazing journey. I'm excited to like keep it going. And sometimes I kick myself, like I should have not kind of got lost in the shuffle when I moved to New York. I wish I would have kept my eye on the ball and been able to do this a lot sooner and a lot faster, and I'd be so much further ahead in my career. And
or maybe not.
Yeah,
maybe you would have burned out and not even done it.
I know, but I keep kicking myself because I'm like, you know, I'm not getting any younger. This is frustrating, but like I said, that, you know, I am where I am and that's where I'm supposed to be. And
yeah,
I'll just keep plugging forward. And I was in, another thing with the mission, I performed at Phoenix Pride, which was kind of another full circle moment, like Utah, because I did my mission in Arizona.
Okay.
And there were people in the audience that one of them I baptized.
Really?
And clearly was not Mormon anymore. Yay. It was a really, really cool experience, but I kind of had, up until that point, felt a little torn about whether I really am grateful I went on my mission, and if it was really what I should have done. You know, maybe I should have gone away to school. I would have learned the same things about living on my own, et cetera, et cetera. And my partner Joe came with me to that gig, and we were having lunch with a woman that lived about an hour south of Phoenix in a town called Casa Grande. And we were having lunch with her, and as a missionary, I used to go over to her house, and her family would make us like dinner at least once a week, it seemed. I mean, they always had us over. They were kind of like a home away from home, a fantastic family. And my partner excused himself from a minute for the table, and she shifted gears in the conversation, and she said, basically, I know you probably questioned whether your mission was worth it or not. And she said, basically, recently my son came out to me, and I would have had absolutely no idea how to deal with it or what he was going through had I not met you. So I'm, you know, for one, I am glad we crossed paths. This is why I met you. And, you know, yeah, it saved the relationship with my son. And she said, the lie is that I was, you know, told that all is lost. That's the lie. You know, I can still love him and I can still be a part of his life. And I, you know, it was a really cool moment for me that I, you know, you cross paths with who you're supposed to cross paths with. Like I said, you know, you're on that path because you're supposed to be. And
right,
looking back, yeah, there were people I met on my mission that may or may not even be Mormon anymore, but we crossed paths because that's when we were supposed to cross paths. And whether they bettered their lives as far as the church is concerned is irrelevant. They've bettered their lives for themselves. And that's, I know it kind of sounds a little hokey.
And your impact on the people or even on your own life, you might not even know.
Right.
And I mean, I have thoughts about my mission too. And I went to Montreal, but it turned out, you know, if nothing else, just by learning French has done me a world of good in Montreal, especially specifically Quebec French, because now I'm back here and that has been invaluable, the agility with the language, which it's a really difficult dialect. So I have to say,
well, especially Canadian French.
Yeah.
Because
it's really, really hard to learn.
I'm taking Rosetta Stone, and so far I'm going to die if I ever go to Paris, because all I'll be able to say is the boy runs with the red ball. I can say it pretty well, but it's not going to get me anywhere.
Well, and even less so in Quebec.
Right, so, exactly.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so, but that's, you know, I'm really of the feeling that we should make a better world for the young people, the young gay people, but I'm really hoping that a lot of us can appreciate the experiences and the struggles we had and the ways they formed us.
Yeah.
If we overcame them, which...
I did a gig at Stonewall when I released Stand for Something in 2010, and it was packed, and it kind of, I don't want to say put a lump in my throat, but like it was really touching to be at the place where the whole gay rights movement officially kind of kicked off. Uh-huh. In the late 60s, and yeah, to be in the same bar where all of that happened, to be at a place where, oh my God, it was illegal for gays to even get together and drink at that point in the nation's history is mind-boggling, that we even were at that point in the 60s. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But like the oppression and the discrimination, and that we've come so far so fast, it's just been so incredible. I mean, we still have a ways to go, but it's really moving to feel like, wow, we are a part of this whole thing. I mean,
yeah.
And if you choose not to be a part of it, you're choosing to slow things down, is kind of my perception, and kind of the whole message of Stand for Something. Like, you know, you got to do something or you're countering the progress. So,
yeah. Well, it is miraculous. And we, even people who've lived through most of that, I mean, I don't remember Stonewall because it wasn't on my radar, but I was alive. And so in my lifetime, I've seen it go from that. You know, I was born at the height of Mad Men, you know, 1961. And
oh, really?
And, yeah.
I mean, you sound like you're 23. Wow.
Yeah, I was born in 61, so I was even alive when JFK was shot, even though I don't remember that either. But
where did you go on your mission? Montreal, that's right.
Montreal,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, in 1981.
Before Canada was a country.
Before the
wall came down,
something like that.
Yeah, right.
Before they unified the Germanys, how's that?
You're right. Yeah,
which didn't impact much, but yeah. So I came out in the 80s, and you know, we were talking about this goal off in the distant horizon of domestic partnership. You know, we were hoping someday in our lifetime we would have the right to have domestic partnership, you know? And
wow.
We weren't even talking about marriage, you know? It wasn't even in our farthest fantasies, and nowhere in the world was that an option.
Or so, even in vocabulary, it was just,
yeah,
you know...
I mean, because the first European country that gave gay marriage wasn't until, I think, after the year 2000. So it really just wasn't even, you know, what we were fighting for. We were just fighting for rights to have jobs and not get fired for being gay and not be harassed by the police. And
right.
And then if we ever got that, then maybe someday we might get domestic partnerships or civil unions, you know.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, it has been amazing to see it evolve and to be part of it. And for me, it's all icing on the cake because it's more than I ever hoped for. So
right. I mean, with the Supreme Court ruling on DOMA, it's amazing. I mean, that's going to open the door to a lot of wonderful things. There's still just...
Well, it opens the door to me to move back to the USA with my partner,
who right.
is now allowed to be my husband and can get immigration sponsorship because we're legally recognized. So it
but then,
gives me a huge option.
Right. But they kept the clause where states don't have to recognize same-sex marriages in other states. But I'm sure that will start to get challenged as things go on.
It's going
to
go down.
The Supreme Court kind of tiptoed pretty lightly. I mean, they could have just been extremely heavy-handed.
No, the language they used will really sets the tone for
right.
striking the rest of DOMA to really make marriage nationwide. But I guess they didn't want to do it all at once.
Right.
So hopefully next year, hopefully 1 year, next Supreme Court, we'll see if they get some cases fast enough to do that.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, at least some of us, including me and you, have access to marriage. And
which has been cool. I mean, immediately I got some messages saying, congrats to you and Joe, when's the wedding date? And I'm like, look, just like straight couples, just because we can doesn't mean we're going to immediately, like at the stroke of midnight, like Cinderella or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a really exciting opportunity, I guess. Just yeah. that, well, you know, it just, it choice. Wasn't there before. Right, right. Yeah. It was just, and so now it's like, wow, I can actually get shackled down into this. Uh-oh. Do I really want to now?
Shackled down. You can also get cheaper health care.
Yep.
You
taxes.
Can also get survivor's benefits. Less taxes, visitation rights. But, yeah, it's true. It's shackled down, but...
No, I was just kidding.
You might want that sometime.
Of course. You know, because as fun as dating is, and then, you know, I mean, there are parts of the gay community that go and, you know, parties and cruises and different, you know, dance events and things, and some are more druggy than others, but, you know, the stereotypes are there. But beyond that, I've gone to some cool events and met some wonderful people and had a really good time and dated around. But there is something to say about having a constant, wonderful person in your life that is there on the really shitty days where you would have been absolutely lonely and regretting being single, you know?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful part of life to have that type of relationship.
Well, what do you want to tell us about your relationship? Do you want to give us a little bit about how you met? And
sure.
Maybe you don't want to... I respect if you don't want to say too much about it, but...
Well, I mean, you know, there's an element of privacy that we enjoy. I'm kind of careful about what I put on Facebook, and there were some things on Wikipedia that pointed, like... what my mom's maiden name was, like, and where I grew up. And I'm like, someone can apply for credit with this information. That's probably not a good idea. And so, like, you know, and when I'm really careful, like, if anyone, like, checks in to places on Facebook that are, like, where I live or something, I usually untag it or delete it. There are a few people that want to find where I live, and I'd better be safe than sorry. Is kind of my thing. But no, Joe and I met actually almost 3 years ago, actually just a little over 3 years ago this month. And we were on a dating site, but it wasn't match.com, that's all I'll say. And
so you were on Grindr.
No, I didn't have a smartphone.
Oh, okay.
At that point, so it wouldn't have worked. But he's like, hey, you know, let's get together. And I'm like, yeah, I know what that means. And he's like, no, really, you know, it'd just be cool to, like, just meet and talk. And I'm like, yeah, I know what that means. And I'm like, why don't we just meet at a regular bar? And he's like, okay. I'm like, really? And so we met at a straight pub. It was McGee's on 53rd Street, I believe, in Hell's Kitchen. And, we met and had a couple of beers and we talked for like 4 or 5 hours, and there was no nookie. There was no, you know, nothing like that going on. It was just a really cool date, like a normal non, you know, it wasn't a meeting to hook up or anything, which you kind of get caught up in that here in New York. Like I said, you know, a lot of people are here just to be single and focus on their career. So that's kind of this habit. It's like it's just kind of what they do, their method. But then, you know, you fast forward the tape and, you know, you're in your 50s or 60s and realize, wow, I've been doing that for this whole time and I didn't find anyone, but I wasn't looking, you know, and now I am, and it's a lot harder. But, and then, over the 4th of July, he took me, he's an outdoorsy type of guy. He's originally from Michigan. And, so the Midwestern charm is there. And he loves camping and stuff, and we go skiing and things. But he planned this trip upstate, and he rented this little island on this lake, and we went there for the 4th. It was quite
romantic.
Yes, quite romantical, I have to say. And he tries to downplay it, like, oh, well, anyone can really do it. It's part of the state park system. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm telling people. I'm telling them it was this, you rented the entire lake, cleared it out of anyone. It was awesome though. And, you know, even down to the food, I was like, oh, well, this is very romantic, really cool. But now I have to eat a hobo dinner wrapped in tinfoil.
Yeah.
But nope, he broke out some like REI freeze dried spaghetti, lasagna, Cajun chicken. It was like, oh my gosh.
Which tastes doubly good in that setting.
Right. Oh, it was amazing. And so, we just kept building on that. We don't have everything in common, but enough that we balance each other. And I feel really good about it. He's a wonderful man, and kind of realize you don't have to have everything in common. And also that I should never date another artist. Because I've done that. It kind of, you know, I'm a little scatterbrained, and other artists seem to be the same, and it's just kind of a mess. And he also works in finance, but he has his passions, like the outdoors and things, and it's refreshing to participate in those things with him. And
plus, it's easier to talk him into going to Utah for a while.
Right, right.
There's great options there for that.
And he would move there in a heartbeat. He's just really not cool with the state legislators all voting the way the church wants them to vote in almost everything. He's just very disappointed that, I mean, I would love to move there at some point, but he's just like, well, you'd be moving alone. Because I'm not going to do it until I can get a glass of wine without having to order food.
I think they changed that law.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean, though. It's like, right, yeah, it's like, come on.
It's exacerbating. I mean, I moved back to Utah after having left, and it didn't take me long to figure out that once you leave, it's really hard to go back. Maybe
right.
Different now, but just...
Well,
it's terribly exacerbating the way the government works and...
Yeah, I go back probably every 2 to 3 months to visit family. I miss my family terribly, but, you know, there are just some aspects of the culture that I just feel like I can't move back yet. I would be really excited to spend more time with, like, my nieces and nephew. But on the flip side, I would still be just so frustrated that it feels like every single time something happens in Utah as far as LGBT issues go, it's five pushes forward and then three steps back and maybe one step forward every 5 years. And it's just,
and it's all connected to the church. I mean,
yes, it's really frustrating.
Whatever happens in the church happens in Utah, basically.
Well, and the church has recently come out saying, you know, that Mormons and gays website, and then CNN. Did you see that clip that I was on back in December?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, okay, so the church is now saying that it's okay to be nice to gay people now, and we love you, and we want you to be part of everything. And it's like, well, but that's not what you've been saying for the last 80 years. You've vilified, made us look like we're demonic sexual addicts, perverts, and now you're just saying it's okay to be nice to us and we love you? And it's going to take a lot of time to fix a lot of the damage that was done. And people in Utah, you know, there's a large majority
we can't even fix the damage until we stop doing the damage.
Right,
so that's,
right.
That's the first priority, is stop doing the damage. And I really hope that that's pretty soon that we can have a movement to even stop damaging these young kids who are still being damaged now.
Right.
The suicide rate is still high.
Yeah, it is.
It's still terribly high.
In fact, suicide is the leading cause of death in women in Utah between a certain age demographic. I don't know the specifics, but it's in the 20s up to the 40s, and it was staggering. And a lot of it
also disproportionately high for the young men.
Yes, 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 it is.
That's most certainly because of gay young men who have the overwhelming number of suicides.
Yep. In Utah. And there's a lot of pushback from the church saying that they really don't have anything to do with it. They teach love and acceptance. And it's like, yeah, that's on paper, but that's not what I learned.
That's not what's happening in the wards.
Right.
That's not what is happening in the communities.
And it's really hostile. Yeah, it's slowly changing as people and the younger generations are starting to stand up more and say, no, I'm not putting up with this. This isn't how Christ would want us to be at all. In the whole core of Christianity, this is absolutely wrong. I do support marriage equality and things like that. And it's kind of cool and refreshing to see that happening.
Yeah,
and
there's a strong movement, and I love those people. The Mormon Allies are my favorite people on earth, and they are just...
I know, I'm like, where were you 5, 10 years ago?
Well, they're here now.
Right, right.
They are,
very true.
They are really amazing. And it's really, really exciting to see that.
And it's kind of funny to see, like, these Mormon allies come out of the closet that they've always been allies, you know, like that they're not going to get excommunicated for it, at least right now.
Yeah.
So it's okay to come out as an ally. So it's, I'm like, more power to you. Thank you. It's, yeah. We can't do it without
them. That's just it. That's why there is changes, because the allies, we absolutely cannot do it without the allies. But anyway, back to your relationship though, you moved in together.
Yes, yes, we did.
How long y'all been living together? How long did he wait? How long after you met him?
Probably about a year.
Okay.
So yeah, I learned my lesson.
Normal time. 1 year.
No rushing in and moving in like people joke that lesbians do after just a few weeks or a month.
Yeah.
And we are going to be moving into a larger apartment. It's still in New York City, in Manhattan, but we'll have a lot more space, and I can actually have my guitars in the apartment instead of having them in a storage unit 3 miles away where I have to take a bus to go get them. And by the time I get there, I've forgotten my idea that I wanted to do. So, but that's, yeah. I mean, it's what Manhattan is. Unless you've got a lot of money, you're going to have to cut down on some of the fringe benefits and square feet.
Miniature living.
Yes. Hotel living.
Well, let me switch tracks just a little bit, and then just if you can just focus on what your spiritual journey has been. We've talked about, you know, you left the church, but I didn't really ask you if there's been a replacement in your spiritual journey or what's developed there. Where are you now? I mean, tell me the process that you've gone through with that.
Still evolving. I mean, when I left the church, actually before I even left the church, when I've started to find out all those things that now you can just find so easily on the internet about the polygamy and the blacks and the priesthood and all those things that we talked about before, it felt like the rug was being pulled out from underneath me. Like this thing that I thought was so solid, it was just fabricated, and I was being flat out lied to in some cases. And I just was so appalled that I was just like, well, then everything that was just told was just a bunch of nonsense. And I started looking at everything very objectively, and I'm kind of at a place now that I feel like, for the most part, I just met my mother's half-sister in Seattle. I don't believe I'd ever met her before. They were separated after my mother was born because my mom's mother died, and my grandfather couldn't raise everybody. So everyone got separated eventually. And I was looking for my mom's twin sister, who I grew up knowing. I just was trying to find her on Facebook. And instead, this other woman shows up in Seattle. And I'm like, what the hell? Who is this? And my mom's like, oh, my God, that's my sister. And so, yeah, another full circle story. I met her in Seattle. And she grew up in Utah. And I asked her. She's a very big supporter of LGBT equality. Her family, her kids, her husband are all just absolutely wonderful. And I asked them actually last night at dinner. So through this whole like journey with the whole Mormon thing and then everything here in Seattle, what would you say you are like religion wise? She said, I've had enough. And that's kind of how I feel. I feel I don't need someone at a pulpit telling me what God thinks. My relationship to any higher power is personal and has nothing to do with anyone else. I feel that the scriptures were used and are continued to be used to control. They were invented to do that, as far as Old Testament goes, as we know, like the whole laws of Moses and all the crazy cans and cannots were all just to control a population and really had nothing to do with God. And I kind of feel the same today, that I don't need that control in my life. I don't need to be reading something to remind me to be a good person in order to be a good person. I learned good values from my parents. I didn't learn them at church. And I know some people say, well, you know, you need to have some sort of religion or structure growing up as a child. I don't believe that. that comes from being raised by good parents that teach you values. I went to a Catholic service with my partner. One of his nephews was having his first communion, and I kind of thought the same thing. Like, okay, well, I've obviously been immersed in Mormon doctrine and culture, so why don't I open my mind up a little bit here and listen to some Catholic teachings and things and see if it really is true that, you know, that there are some moral and ethical things that we learn in church, and that's the good thing that we can take away. And I have to say, just like when I was growing up Mormon, only about 5 to 10% of the actual things that are said over the pulpit had anything to do with just being a good person. It was all about worshiping a deity and committing yourself to him, to the church, and spreading their gospel. I don't need that. I've been to a few different denominations here in New York. And as my aunt also said, I went to the Universal Unitarian Church, and she said, yeah, I did that too. It seemed like it was a bunch of atheists who just wanted to make a church to say that they were at least an organization. Church of non-believing churchgoers. And I enjoyed their service, I have to say. But again, like, I know it's a good thing to do good for others, the golden rule and all that stuff. Like, I don't need to go to a church to know that or be reminded of it. So, yeah, I believe in that we're all connected somehow. Kind of like I said on my mission when I met with that woman over Phoenix Pride, how she said, you know, I believe we crossed paths so I would know how to treat my son when he came out to me. It's those types of things that we're all...
That resonates with you.
Yes, we're all part of a fabric in this universe, and we're all actually made, and we're getting all a little scientific here, but we are actually all made from the same matter, and our elements that make up our bodies and our energy are all the same material, and it all comes from the sun, actually. It comes from stars, and this matter can't be destroyed or changed. It just, you know, these elements are constant. And I believe that that has a lot of bearing on who we come into contact with and kind of the give and take of life and kind of the pushback of the universe when you're in too comfortable a situation and you want to change things. I feel like the opposition is always because the universe is used to you being stagnant. And so when you try to change, there's an equal and opposite force kind of trying to keep you in the same place you were because that's how the universe was used to you being. And my stepbrother passed away last year in a car accident. And I found actually a lot of peace, more peace than I actually found while I was Mormon, just in knowing that he is still around. And it's not like his spirit's appearing to me and telling me where things are hidden in a hill. But yeah, it was bad. But
a little snarky.
Yeah, a little bit. But that... He's literally still around. Like the power and the energy that made him who he is still here, and it's in the wind and it's in the light now. It's in the sun. It's all around. And for me to think that he's absolutely gone, it's not logical. It's not possible, and it's not reality. And that actually brought me a lot more comfort than reading any scripture that was written by someone who said they were inspired by someone to write about something that God told someone. I feel like I have the right to that direct connection to whatever higher power there is. And once I established that in my life, I've actually felt a lot more connected to that than I had before.
And do you have any kind of meditative or spiritual practice or music more that fill that role for you?
It really depends on, like, just different experiences I've had seems to be the way it's gone. I've tried yoga. And I mean, that is an amazing meditative, finding your center and finding your peace. But I fall over very easily. I'm a big guy. It just doesn't seem to balance me well. I can try it again. But there's aspects of that that I've actually, it kind of links back into some Buddhist type of things. And I would actually say that I'm really digging some of the philosophies of Buddhism. It's actually very beautiful and extremely balanced. And it's not all about worshiping a deity. It's about finding your center and being connected. It's actually very beautiful, and I...
Yeah, well, I agree. Have you gone very far with that, as far as with Buddhists, or is you're just kind of developing an interest?
Developing an interest, yeah. It's just, and it's actually really cool to feel able to evolve in that, where I, before, as a Latter-day Saint, you're kind of confined to what the church doctrine tells you, and the policies and the everything that's kind of surrounding that doesn't allow you to at least give you the option to think outside the box and pursue those types of things, because, you know, there's an ultimate answer for everything. Yeah. So it's been really neat to feel like I'm in control of my own spiritual journey this way, and that I don't have to subscribe to any certain doctrine or book to follow in order to get that spiritual balance in my life. So it's an evolution, and I think it's supposed to be.
Well, I hope so. I think it is too, and it sure makes sense and sort of helps us hang on to our basic Mormon belief that there's a purpose in all this.
Right.
Which isn't only Mormons who believe that, but I personally like to hang on to the idea that there is some sort of purpose, and the only purpose I can sort of gather is that we need to evolve and we need to experience. We're sort of two things we're here to do, evolve, but also to experience. So,
yeah.
Well, let me ask you then about how things have evolved with your family, with your Mormon family. Have you come to a good space with your relationship with your parents and siblings? And
yeah, everything has turned out, for the most part, really, really well. My father, now every time we talk, tells me how much he loves me and how proud he is of what I'm doing, where when I came out to him, that wouldn't have been the conversation.
What helped him to come around? Just years of exposure to the idea?
Kind of what we're seeing in the political world, where suddenly when it hits home for someone, they realize, oh my God, this isn't just something that someone else is dealing with. My son's gay. So now I have to really think about, you know, what his life is like and what he's had to deal with and what he's had to go through. And oh my God, why would I support, you know, Prop 8 or this or that, knowing I'd be doing this to my own flesh and blood. And we got in a few, not arguments, but he kept kind of throwing some of the church's answers to the whole same gender attraction problem. Some books and things that, of course, I'd already read, but he was trying to push them on me again, saying he read them and he was seeing a therapist about it all, and he was sorry he failed me as a father. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
So he was getting the reparative therapy line.
Right.
Your father made you gay.
Right, right. And it's just, ugh. And I finally just said, Dad, if you believe in a God that is going to separate me from you because of who I love and have as a partner in my life, no matter if anything else applies, I could leave this world a better place, but because I have a male as a partner, he's going to separate us. I said, then I don't believe in the same God you do, and frankly, I don't want to. And it seems like since we had that conversation, he kind of sat back and was like, huh, well, maybe they don't have the answers they thought they did. And he's still kind of in the maybe 1 foot in the door of, we'll find out in the next life. Yeah. You know, that famous answer for everything that they don't know or don't want to talk about. But he's much more open, and I actually have a better relationship with him than I'd ever had in my life.
I mean, I'm actually okay with that answer. We'll find out in the next life, as long as you allow me to hope for what is obviously right to me.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They don't condemn me to everlasting burning in hell, you know.
Right. With murderers, adulterers, and...
Murderers and pedophiles.
Right, right. But it just seemed like that, though, was an answer to a lot of things in my youth that they just either didn't want to address or didn't have the answers to or didn't want to talk about because it would bring up something in the past that the church isn't too proud of, you know. Yeah. Like, why did polygamy happen? Well, we'll find out in the next life. Or it was to take care of the pioneers who'd lost their husbands. Or these little half-truths, like I said before, that's what got the whole thing into trouble in my mind, was like, why are you telling me half the story? Let me make up my own mind. Give me everything, and I'll choose for myself, you know?
Well, we're hoping they're going to do that. And sort of,
I think it'll be. I think they're being forced into that corner with the digital age and the internet. I think so many more people are finding out the whole story of everything and getting that information, and you know, bringing that up to their bishops and stake presidents and people in the church and saying, look, you're not telling the whole story. I found this and it is fact. And you said it wasn't, and it is. So what's the deal? So I think they're going to have to start owning up to a lot of their history. And I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
What about your sibs and your...
My little brother was pretty much on board as soon as I came out. My older brother, it took him a while to come around. He was a little uncomfortable to talk about it with friends when they would bring up, you know, is your brother really gay? I heard he was gay. And he'd be like, so how the jazz doing? You know, like, but now it's absolutely wonderful. I couldn't ask for a more supportive and loving family. I honestly couldn't. It took a while, again, like I said, for my dad to come around, but that was a drop in the bucket, it seems, to compared to how I've seen other people be treated by their families, and breaks my heart that someone would have a child and, you know, they could be a drug addict and all these other things, but if they're gay, oh my God, I can't have a son around who's that, you know? It's just horrible. And so, you know, every once in a while, I still actually get emails from people that have either not come out to their families and are scared to, or they have and they've been kicked out, and these things are still happening. And that also helps, you know, makes me realize, you know, it's not just about the music, it's about the message. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, to show that people deserve to be loved and accepted for who they are. And it's, you know, it's also part of my story. So,
well then tell me then, what are your aspirations as far as family goes?
Like having my own?
Yeah. What's your dream?
2.5 dogs and a white picket fence would be nice. And a loft in Soho.
With a white picket fence. That'll be some loft.
No, the white picket fence is in the Hamptons. Oh, that's good. That's good. Or Connecticut. I don't know. I mean, that's evolving as well. Like, I would love to have a family on one hand, but on the other hand, I enjoy my music and what I'm doing right now so much that I don't want to be one of those people that gets a dog just to have a dog and then never walks it and gets someone else to do it and really never plays with a dog, especially in New York. It's really hard to do.
Yeah.
So the same thing, I don't want to have a kid just to say, okay, I've had a kid because I wanted to, and then I'm not there to support and love and raise, I have someone else do it. That's just not cool, because there are people that would love to have children and can't, and would devote every minute of their day to raising one if they could, yet I don't want to just adopt one or have one any other way just to say that I have and then have someone else raise it. It just seems...
Yeah.
It just,
you're not
just
seeing
it
as
right.
It's the only choice. You're seeing as it's a choice, and you might come to that, but you're not specifically seeing that as the only way to go.
Right, right. I mean, there's other ways also to be involved, like Big Brothers Big Sisters program, or being a foster parent, or helping out in other ways. Joe is extremely community and humanitarianly focused. He's also a big animal lover. He volunteers at animal shelters and things, and
So you see that at least if your family is you and Joe, you guys are going to be involved in your community, because that's what he really is.
Yes. Yeah. We both enjoy that a lot. Right. Just leaving the world a better place. It's not all about how many kids you have. It's really about how much you love and who you include in that love.
Well, okay. So Justin, what I want to do now with your permission is hear a few of your songs. And so Justin's going to give us a few sort of key songs from his career, and I think it's going to give us an idea of what it's all about. I do want to warn the audience that I'm giving you qualities that are podcast qualities, so I want you to hear them anyway because it's really relevant to this interview, but I really, really do hope you will go and seek them out on iTunes, because I really hope you buy them. But if you just want to hear it once, go to MySpace, and you can also hear them at Justin Lutley's MySpace, which is easy to find on Google.
You can also find them on Amazon.com, and my website has some streaming ones too.
Okay. So, but meanwhile, I would like to take you through them here as part of this podcast with substantially reduced quality. And so let's take these few songs, but let's take them in order of when they were part of your life, so we can get an idea of what it was like for you at that time of your life, at which phase of your life you're talking about. And yeah, I guess the first one that we're going to listen to in that sequence would be Shades of Grey, right?
Right. That was the first song that I wrote that wasn't technically a Mormon contemporary song that I would have put out on a religious label type thing like I had previously. Uh-huh. I wrote this when I was going through the XK therapy program, as well as after, when I had found someone I wanted to date, and then was told by my bishop again that he'd passed away because I wasn't supposed to be gay, and that I must be gay because of, again, my dad not being there, or that I looked at pornography as a kid, which would have been the Sears catalog, you know, like whatever.
Yeah. Terrible born.
So the last verse in that song is actually the conversation I had with the bishop in metaphor. In the verse, I'm talking about a conversation with a doctor who said that I'm incurable, you know. So that's what the Shades of Grey is about.
Okay. Well, let's hear it now. And I really encourage you to really listen to the lyrics, because that's what's super relevant, even though musically it's going to be interesting too. So here goes.
Shades of Grey are coming up tonight.
So, wow, Justin, that's fantastic. And if I wasn't a fan before, I definitely am now. I'm really excited to hear the other ones, but that really does tell an amazing story. And having that background information just makes it even more deeper, especially to those of us who have gone through such similar experiences. So, you know, that's really moving.
Well, thank you.
So thank you.
Yeah, I perform it a little bit differently since I'm not as cautious of a performer as I was before. I was afraid that if I, again, talked about or was too specific about the reasons I wrote it, I would lose interest in the audience's interest, which is not the case, I've realized now. So at the end of Shades of Grey, when the doctor and I have that conversation, in the song it says, "Excuse me, sir, pardon me if I shout, but do you know what you're talking about?" When I do it live, I usually throw in the word fuck. Like, do you know what the fuck you're talking about? And it usually packs a punch with the audience, and at every Pride event that I've done, it usually gets standing ovation. People start clapping, and
I believe it.
And it's not just
I can't wait to see you do it live, because
it's not just to throw in an explicative. It really does draw the power of I've had enough. No, that's not the case, and you don't know what you're talking about. And that's when the turning point, you know, of when I decided to just start living on my own terms, even though it's easier said than done at that point. But
that was the beginning of the journey anyway,
yes,
at least of where you had made the resolve to
exactly
to control your own destiny in a way.
Right.
Okay, well, we've got two others then. What was sort of the next one then out of these two that in your journey, at least? Was Great Escape sort of...
Great Escape was released after Stand for Something, but I wrote it actually before Stand for Something. So sequentially, Great Escape is next in order of life and experiences. Great Escape was about... I actually wrote that after I'd released the album Runaway, and that's when I decided to move to New York. So I actually wrote Great Escape, at least the bones of it, in 2006, and did some revising and updating to it when I released it on the new album. But it's about moving from a place of limitations to a place where you get to become and do and believe anything you want. So, I mean, physically I was moving to New York, but, you know, emotionally, spiritually and all that, I was allowing myself to move to a place where I could kind of reboot my life and do and become what I want to become. And so that's what the song's about, and it's inviting the listener to kind of take that journey as well.
So let's play that now.
Think and I can write. Ooh, just to get away. Out of my bed, out of my head, out of the dark, I'm thinking of you. I'm breaking apart and starting something new. Wake up and wake up. everyone else passed you by. I'm screaming out loud to the shallow and proud, letting it out and bringing it to you. And the places we found, well, these feet have got to move. Yeah, yeah, your life is calling. Better get moving on before it's too late. And hey, yeah, this rock is rolling. Tell me all about your
Okay, well, excellent. The first two songs we've heard are really complementary because they're, in a way, it's the continuation of the theme, but this time one was sort of waking up to what you have to do, but then the second one was really embracing it and realizing that you've got to jump into a world that you don't know yet.
Yeah. And then almost like the urgency that if you don't jump into it, it'll leave without you. Like,
yeah.
You got to, like I said, this rock is rolling. You got to get on it.
And that's, I mean, and this is so important because it's called The Great Escape, but it's also the great
awakening.
Awakening, or what can I say? You know, it's not that you're escaping on the train, it's that you've got to make the train.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and you got to make the train. And this is something important about everyone's life. We really have to at some point make the tough decision that really allows us to live to the fullest.
Right.
Okay, well, let's move to the third one then. And this is a great song called Stand for Something.
I wrote the bare bones of that while I was in Utah, but it really came to fruition when Proposition 8 passed. I was just furious again. Like we talked about, that the church was becoming politically and monetarily involved in creating those other organizations that it pretended not to be involved with, like National Organization of Marriage and all that, to start to lobby Congress and start trying to pass laws barring equality in marriage and the workplace and other things. And it just really frustrated me that the Prop 8 was happening the way it did. And I decided, instead of just being mad and bitter and upset, kind of like a Catholic living in Provo by choice, yeah. I was thinking, instead of just complaining about it, why don't I do something with it? So I dusted off the track and realized that this was expressing some of that same eagerness that I was feeling back in Utah, that you know, to make a difference. And I felt like, well, instead of writing a song about how frustrated I am, why don't I talk about making a difference and the journey of that, and finding out maybe you're not standing for yourself because maybe it doesn't apply to you, like, you know, some of our straight allies, but you're taking a stand for me, and you're doing that to make us a better people, and just that importance of it. And I really fell in love with the song, and it really propelled my career again. Like I said, when I did that musical Our Country, that really jump started it again. And then when I released Stand for Something a year after the musical, it just really went far. It got nominated for 4 Out Music Awards that year, the most of any other of any other artist, and it won Best Country Song of the Year.
Wow.
So yeah, it
what's that, 4UPS?
Oh, it was nominated for 4 Out Music Awards that year.
Oh, Out Music Awards.
Okay. Yeah, by the LGBT Academy of Recording Arts, and
okay.
Then it won the Best Country Song of the Year, and that was like kind of what, I don't want to say pigeonholed me as a country artist in New York, but I thought, well, I think there's probably only other there's probably only 2 country artists in New York besides me. They're all in Nashville, so I will take as much description as possible, because there's a million other folk artists in New York. So if they want to label me as country, I am totally fine with that, because that will make me a little bit more of a of an original in New York. So
yeah, there's a lot of gay people hungering for country music that speaks to them too,
and it's not really, you know, hoedown country. It's more like, someone said it's like Sheryl Crow Daughtry country.
Yeah.
Or country light, but of course now we know that country can just be anything, even if it's pop. They just happen to be playing it.
Well,
on country,
I mean, one thing
radio.
The country really does is it does tell stories, and
right.
So that's a great thing about it. And so if you fit there because you're telling a story, I can see you wanting to embrace that. So well, let's hear "Stand for Something."
After the grave, and they're so sadly mistaken.
Bravo for that one too. That's really, you know, anyone could hear that song and apply it to what they believe in, right?
Right. That was the idea.
For me, it makes it more nicer because I know what you're applying it to an issue that I also embrace, and the inspiration for you was an issue I embrace. So I would like to see that become an anthem for us. So.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, I think you should become a superstar.
Thank you.
I vote for you to be a major music voice there.
That would be cool. I'm just hoping that I hit the hearts and minds I'm supposed to and gain a decent following and be able to do what I love. That's really...
Now, do you do videos too that go onto Logo or anything?
Eventually. I'm a little behind in that department.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you have some things that people chase you on YouTube? Or are we going to see anything
yep.
that you're proud of there? Okay.
Yep, I will be... I've already got some things on there, but there will be some music videos by the end of this year that will be out. So I'll have my first music video up.
But I think what I really need to do is encourage people to buy your albums, because it sounds like that's where the very best recordings are going to be the ones we can get on Amazon or iTunes, right?
Yes, and come see me live. And I'm not, you know, yes, I am tooting my own horn in a way, but
I'll toot it for you. Go see Justin live.
But
he's going to be at a lot of Pride still coming up, and I wish I had gotten this out before the Seattle and the DC Prides, because I would have loved to have promoted him among the Mormon contingents who were going. Because I know we did have contingents on both of those parades for Mormons for Marriage Equality.
Right.
And so,
But I'll be at San Diego. I'll be at a whole host of other events. So just check my website and Facebook, and I'm always listing them on there. But I've always been told at these gigs by fans of my music that, oh my God, you're actually better live. Like, you just, it packs a different punch.
Well, I'm believing it now, because just recognizing, you know, when it's just a song, that's one thing, and they are great songs, but when it's really an experience that you're relating to, and you're singing about that, and you're talking about it, and you're sharing it in sort of a way that's a journey, I can't imagine it, that it's got to be more moving. And so I'm looking forward. I'm definitely going to see you at one of these prides coming up.
Cool. Well, and this year I'm also focusing on just booking my own shows instead of just relying solely on Pride events to take me around. Because, I mean, it's a great source of audience doing the Pride gigs.
Yeah.
But I also find that it's kind of limited. Like, you know, I don't get to choose what stage or what time I perform or all that stuff. And I'd like to just go and do a gig on my own terms. And
have probably a better sound.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes all the Prides are different. You've got ones that are all volunteers, you got ones that have people that are paid, so sometimes it's a little chaotic, a little unorganized, and then some of them are organized down to the wire, and it's a great experience. Like LA was great, and Stockholm was fantastic. Those were just really, really wonderfully done. But there are some others that I'm like, I was supposed to go on at 4 and it's now 5:30. And there's people waiting to hear me play that are now leaving because they had planned to do other things, you know, so it's a little frustrating sometimes, but you know, I'm glad I'm doing what I'm doing. It's fantastic. So I'm not complaining there, but it'd be nice to have a little more, organization.
Well, that'll give more people more chances too. And it'll also mean you'll give more concerts in the off season.
Yes, absolutely.
There isn't Pride parades happening. So.
Right.
Okay, well, Justin, I sure appreciate your giving me the time and being willing to share your story, and I am super excited to get it out there and have gay Mormons who, you know, made a life for himself and had to move out of the church, that is, but really turned everything around in a positive way for himself. So I really want to tell your story, and I super appreciate it. And
you're absolutely welcome, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I hope you'll have me back when I win my Grammy. And
yeah, you're gonna like even talk to me then.
Oh, please. That's one thing that I was just adamant about. Like, if I ever make it big, I am still going to know where I came from and who supported me to get there, and absolutely you can count on having me back if that's the case too. So
okay, well, besides that, we got to meet up for I'm heading down to New York, and I'm really counting on you to go out for a lunch or something with me. So
count on it. So,
okay, well, very good then. Thanks a lot. And over and out for today.
All right.
Have a good day and a good week.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson.
Shall thou